In today's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Barbie Bulls, the cognition dietitian who specializes in cardiometabolic and cognitive health during menopause. Barbie and I specifically spoke about how women can improve brain health today and reduce their risk of cognitive decline in the future, especially Alzheimer's. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Barbie, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Barbie. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Barbie Bulls. She's the cognition dietitian who specializes in menopause, cardiometabolic health, and cognitive health. Barbie, I'm super excited to speak with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, this is going to be so much valuable information for all of our listeners because many of them fall into the bracket of women that you tend to speak to, which is kind of midlife women, perimenopausal, menopausal, etc. But before we kind of get into the specifics, I would love to hear a bit more about you and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, thank you. So I have been a dietitian for almost 25 years, and long story short, always with a focus on women's health. I've seen men throughout my career, love working with men, but my passion has always really been women's nutrition and lifestyle needs. We are a little bit different. we're finding out more and more every day, which is super exciting. Finally, we're getting the research that we deserve. But and as I got older and my needs were changing and there wasn't a lot of information sort of mainstream available for women, like why the weight gain, why the increase in blood pressure, why the increase in LDL cholesterol and insulin resistance, and why aren't we sleeping, and all of these things. And so I started to really dive in and investigate the menopause transition and all of the things that can come up for us, no matter how well we're taking care of ourselves. That decline in estrogen in particular, other hormones as well, really does impact our whole body system. And then I began to realize that this really impacts the health of our brain. It kind of started with a real interest in brain fog and like, why is this happening? Which took me down a road to realizing that 2/3 of everyone diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease is female. And why is that? And so this just kind of snowballed into something that became super fascinating to me and the focus of my, you know, my professional focus. But then that all became very personal a few years ago when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And she lives with me and I am her primary caregiver. So I do see this disease up close and personal every day and have been through, you know, everything that's required to give her the best care and all the diagnoses and everything like that. So yeah, it's both a professional and personal passion, fascination, and I will spend the rest of my life trying to help change the trajectory for women where this disease is concerned.
Well, thank you for sharing a little bit about yourself and your own why as well. I love your mission. I truly, truly do, because I think it's so important to hear that we can also do something about it, at least in the sense of preventing the probabilities a little bit. And you really speak to that. You give us such practical tips in the sense of lifestyle, but also, of course, what interests me a lot is the nutritional aspect. And so perhaps you can go a little bit into why these brain changes occur and why specifically in women and what we can do to reduce the risk of cognitive decline as we age.
Right. So that's such a big question. And I wish I had the answer, right? We don't really know what causes Alzheimer's disease in particular. Some of the other dementias, vascular dementia, are maybe a little bit more not completely clear cut, but obviously our vascular health, our, you know, LDL cholesterol, our cardiovascular fitness is going to impact our risk of vascular dementia. But when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, it is still a bit of a mystery. And one hypothesis, a very strong hypothesis, one that I can get behind, but it just isn't fully elucidated yet, is the estrogen hypothesis of why women maybe are more vulnerable, it seems, to Alzheimer's disease. And this has to do with this decline in estrogen, progesterone during the menopause transition. The brain is just filled with estrogen receptors. They're all throughout our body. I mean, this is a whole system kind of change that happens. This is not just reproductive at all. Lots of things are going on, but our brains are particularly impacted because there are a lot of estrogen receptors there. And as they become less stimulated because we have less estrogen, neurological changes do happen. And that can be seen kind of acutely with brain fog, maybe some confusion, forgetfulness, maybe mood instability, but then longer term, it may be part of what is setting us up for an increased risk of neurodegenerative disease. And so the brain is just not communicating as well as it was previously. That said, provided that neurodegenerative disease is not setting in, if it's just sort of this brain fog or confusion or forgetfulness, that tends to stabilize after a few years post-menopause for most women who are not actually developing neurodegenerative disease. So that's the good news. So if you're in the thick of the menopause transition, perimenopause, and like you can't remember a thing, usually that does not mean neurodegenerative disease. It's just this sort of temporary chaos that's happening inside your brain. So I wish I had a really clear-cut answer. We just don't have one yet, which is why, as you alluded to before, we do have so much agency over this. We can talk about the Lancet Commission, the 2024 report, which identified 14 risk factors. If we could get a hold of those 14 modifiable risk factors, we could reduce the incidence of dementia. Now, this is all dementias, not just Alzheimer's, by 45%, which is almost half. I mean, and then of course, it doesn't even include things like nutrition. So there are experts who believe we could actually impact the disease by 80 or 90% if we were really, taking into account things that we know matter, but just we don't really have documented research yet, like we do for the 14 things that the Lancet Commission highlights. So we have a lot of impact on our risk for this disease. Only a maybe 1-2% of Alzheimer's disease in particular is genetically predetermined, meaning you carry genes where the likelihood of you developing this disease is almost guaranteed. But these are very rare genes. You would see this in your family, you would know, and it causes early Alzheimer's. Whereas then there are the APOE gene, the APOE4 gene, which is a different gene that is not deterministic. It actually just increases risk. So, but even if you carry APOE4, one or two copies, there's still a lot you can do. And I know that's what we'll get into. Sorry, that was very long-winded, but I just
No,
wanted to say.
I love it. And I have to say, I actually saw everything that you said as positive news because,
Oh, good.
I do think, of course, while, it is not great news that women are more likely to get Alzheimer's or to have cognitive decline in that sense. But first of all, I think the positive news for anyone going through menopausal brain fog, et cetera. It's great to hear that you come out on the other side with a clearer brain again. And I do know, or I have heard that nonetheless, there are so many changes that our brain goes through throughout that time. So it almost feels like you are a little bit of a different person, perhaps at post-menopause, but that's not a bad thing. I mean, we're not the same people that we were throughout our adolescence or as a teenager.
Before puberty or pregnancy or all of these, right? I mean, there's the three major hormonal shifts in a woman's life: puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause. So the three P's, right? And we're not quite the same as we were before any of those. Yeah, it's your brain really does in many ways sort of remodel, and it's not worse, it's just slightly different. And we can learn to work with that, but hopefully we can halt progression of or prevent actual disease.
Yeah, that really I think sounds very promising, especially in the sense of being able to prevent 45 the
Percent, yeah.
exactly, and then adding nutrition to that, perhaps even more. So I would love to hear about these 14 modifiable risk factors.
Yes, absolutely. Let's see if I can rattle them off. So there are each has a different percent that goes along with them. But the top two interestingly, are hearing loss. So if your hearing is starting to change, get treatment, get to see an audiologist, have it assessed, and wear a hearing aid because this does reverse the risk. But a lot of people kind of go without, or they're maybe in denial, or maybe they don't realize. But if people are saying to you, you're not hearing what I'm saying, go get it checked out. Second, and this is just added this year, is elevated LDL cholesterol. So all the people out there in social media, Bill, who are talking about how LDL cholesterol does not matter. They do not know what they're talking about. Please don't listen to that. Elevated LDL cholesterol is directly causative of atherosclerotic heart disease. So there's that, but then it also increases risk of dementia. So vision loss was also just added this year. So again, if your vision is starting to go, get it corrected. Smoking, excessive drinking, obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure. High blood pressure is just something that is not too challenging to get a hold of these days. LDL cholesterol, too, with the advent of the medications that can really help with that, in addition to lifestyle. Social isolation. And this does not mean that we need to start being the life of the party, but we really want to be sure we're maintaining healthy social connection. We feel supported. We feel a part of something. Depression. If you are at risk for depression or have depression, please do get it treated. There is help available. I am not sure. Oh, air pollution, which feels like something that we can't control, and in many ways, it is out of our control. But doing whatever we can to reduce it. Head injury also feels like something that maybe we don't have a lot of control over, but this is wearing a helmet. This is being safe when you're playing sports. This is maybe not engaging in super risky sports. This is leaving a situation with domestic violence. This is just making sure you care for your brain in that way. Was that 14? I'm not sure. I wasn't counting. I should have been counting, but I will say that if it wasn't, what you can do is you can Google the Lancet Commission for Dementia Prevention, Intervention, and Care 2024, and it outlines all 14 risk factors. We got close. If that wasn't for another one might pop into my head. Oh, did I say less education? I don't
No.
think I said
No.
that. So that is one that also confuses a lot of people because it's like, well, I can't go back to my childhood and change, my early childhood education. But and that's true, and it does matter, that we receive higher quality education, when we're growing up. That's more of a public health issue than anything we can do on an individual level. That said, one of the pillars of brain health is increasing what's called cognitive reserve. And the way that we do that is we continue to learn and we continue to stimulate our brain. We treat it like a muscle and give it a workout with cool new information that we can actually go out in the world and use. So,
Really, really good. And I will definitely provide a link to that
yeah.
those 14 pointers in the show notes as well. Several
Great.
surprising things for me on there. Not so much the latter. I am definitely very much aware of that. And even though I personally think that learning, of course, gets harder as we age. I'm
Yes.
currently learning to speak Spanish, and
Oh,
oftentimes
that's
I'm like,
great.
ah, oh, it's super frustrating. But I know, especially when I lean into that frustration, eventually I'll get through it. Like 2, 3 months later, I'm like, ah, oh, a few months ago I was struggling to express myself when it came to this and that, and now I can actually. It's almost natural. And so, even though it's very hard, or like my mom, for example, she loves doing crossword puzzles and things like that. And even though, I think everyone can find something else if it's music for someone, or trying a
Yes.
different sport every year or so. Like, I think there is really something about forcing yourself, or not necessarily forcing, but getting
Ch
yourself
challenging yourself.
exactly
Challenging yourself.
doing
Yeah,
new
absolutely.
things.
The key to it, I mean, crossword puzzles, brain games, and things like that are great. I mean, that's fun. But you're training yourself for that particular skill. What we really want more of is what you're talking about, learning a new language, learning an instrument, and actually practicing it and using it on I mean, ideally a daily basis, but weekly, month, traveling and immersing yourself in that language and not letting yourself speak English, just or whatever your natural language or your native language is, just really forcing yourself. I don't mind the word forcing. I mean, I think that because we have to, right? We're so distracted. We've got so much going on. The last thing we want to do is learn something new in a lot of cases, especially when it sort of feels maybe a little frivolous, but it's not. It will absolutely preserve your brain in the long run.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And the two surprising things, or a couple surprising things on that list that you mentioned for me was the social isolation and the depression one, which kind of go hand in hand, let's be
They
honest.
can,
Yeah, often anyway. But I mean, it makes complete sense. I just didn't expect it to be on that list. And I think it's encouragement for people to be more engaged in their communities, even if it's like volunteer work or going to their church group or just saying, oh, today I'm instead of working from home, I'm going to go to that cafe and not use my headphones, smile at people and be a little bit creepy in that sense, perhaps, but yeah.
Those are all awesome examples of how to do that. And just to sort of, kind of drive it home a little bit more, it is believed that, I mean, it's slightly more complex, but it is believed that the hearing loss, the vision loss, the social isolation, and the depression, part of the reason for those being risk factors is this sort of the fact that you're limiting stimulation to your brain. And for socializing, it's great if you, I mean, even just having one awesome person in your life, that's wonderful. But if you can manage to have sort of a spectrum of people who challenge you in or stimulate you in different ways, just really, again, just thinking of your brain like a muscle and giving it a workout as often as you can. Obviously, rest is super important too. Getting good quality sleep is essential. And I have a feeling that that sleep will be on the Lancet's list one of these days. I think, and nutrition, the problem is it's hard to sort of nail down exactly what the recommendation should be for a lot of these things. But sleep is certainly crucial to a healthy functioning brain.
Yeah, I think everybody who's trying to learn something or has tried to study for something and has to perform well cognitively is probably or hopefully aware of the fact
Already familiar with that.
of sleep. But yeah, hopefully it will be on that list too. And it again makes sense in terms of being stimulated by different people or just different sensory input. And I love that recommendation of having different kind of people around you. I often hear from clients or just other acquaintances, oh, there's no one really in my environment that I'm really like bonding with or on that's challenging me, who's on my level, who also has the same goals. Thankfully, nowadays with the internet, I mean, you and I, we're talking right now, it's a conversation, and I think if we can still we can expand our circle that way. We can look for like-minded people that way. But I would also, yeah, like to point out here what exactly what you said. Not everybody in your life needs to be your best friend or the most, is inspiring person. There might be someone who you just have fun with in a once a week and go paddle ball playing with them, and then there is someone else who you are in a book club with, or so it's impossible to expect one person to kind of check all the boxes, just like it's not possible for our romantic partner to do that.
Unfortunately. So anything you can do to sort of increase those social connections and social bonds,
Yeah,
the better
and
for your brain.
I think that that kind of leads nicely into one thing that you also speak about so beautifully, and that's physical fitness. Often I think women necessarily immediately connect the dots of like, oh, okay, I'm going through menopause, I should or exercise can benefit the symptoms there. Could you expand a little bit on what type of training and why the exercise is actually helpful?
So, I mean, across the board, first, I just want to say, just move your body. Like, don't worry so much, especially if you're just starting out or you haven't been moving for some time or you've had an injury or it's never been your thing. Just move, take walks, do some nice, stretchy yoga, whatever. Once you're ready to sort of level up to the more kind of guidelines, let's just say, around 150 minutes of zone two cardiovascular exercise a day, or sorry, a week. That would be awfully hard. 150 minutes of zone two cardiovascular exercise a week. So that would be about 65, 75% of your max heart rate. Then an additional 20 to 30 minutes of high intensity activity, not all at once, kind of scattered throughout. So that's about 85, 90% of your max heart rate. And then this is what is so important for women, especially in midlife, is strength training. We really need to get after at least maintaining, if not building, muscle mass. This impacts us in so many ways, and it's about 70 or more minutes per week, divided up however you like. And I'm not going to get too granular about that. I'm sure you have other people who do do that just fine. But what I really want to impress is this is not just about what we look like. This is about our metabolic function. This is about increasing something called BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which all exercise does, but strength training is really good for this. This is like miracle grow for the brain. It just really, it's something that our bodies naturally produce, and exercise helps us produce more of it, and it really helps brain function. And not only chemically does exercise help, so neurotransmitters and connections and communication within the brain, but also, especially something like strength training, if you're doing sort of multiple movements or balance exercises, this is neuromuscular. Your brain is working kind of extra hard to keep you balanced or coordinated. This is really great for your brain. So any form of exercise that you enjoy that you will be consistent about is recommended, but we really want to get nice and cardiovascularly fit, increase our VO2 max, get our cardiorespiratory fitness, very important for longevity. Keep that muscle mass, nice and strong, really important for the insulin sensitivity, that we can start to become more insulin resistant as there we go, as we age. And also balance and flexibility. We don't want to forget about exercises that help us with balance and flexibility, because those are things that are very difficult to get back once we've sort of lost them. So, in so many ways, nutrition is something that brain health experts can sort of pick apart and maybe disagree on certain areas of it. But exercise is something everybody agrees on. And in my personal opinion, I think it's one that's shared by, well, at least the people that I really admire in this field, cardio is just as important as strength training, and all of it is just as important as balance and flexibility. We want to be nice and well-rounded, not too heavy in any one area.
That's a really good overview, and I love it how you started off with start wherever you are, in the sense of if you're listening to this and you're currently not doing anything or getting 2,000 steps a day, by all means just focus on walking for now. That's going to be a really great way to just stress your cardiovascular system for now, and then adding in some body weight exercises or, like you said, a yoga class or so, and then really that emphasis on also not neglecting balance and flexibility is, I think, really great, because it helps with that whole proprioception, our own placement in space. So if we're tripping, which happens to all of us, and we know that as we age, falls tend to be the most detrimental things, really. So
That's
if you
right.
catch yourself and have good balance and good coordination to begin with, you're very or a lot more likely to prevent any long-term damage. And to your point of start where you are, you also have this great thing that I've said seen a few times on your social media, and that's, instead of just giving yourself 6 weeks, imagine what your results would look like if you focused on a year or beyond that. Maybe you can share with us what causes you to emphasize that point and why you say that.
Well, in the more than 20 years of doing this, it was sort of a natural evolution that I started to notice the people who had much longer term goals. They were not concerned about what we now call their summer body, or it wasn't about that for them. It was about next year. It was about taking care of, being able to run around with grandchildren. It was about being able to continue to hike or ski or scuba dive with their friends. It wasn't just about what they looked like in the short term. And I just over time began to realize it's about a year that we want to be looking forward to, not anything short of that. Because if we're really giving ourselves a nice solid 12 months to learn new habits, to solidify new habits, to experiment, because there is no calculation, there is no coach that's going to be able to say, here's your plan. I just talked to you for an hour. Here's your plan, and it's going to work perfectly for the rest of your life. Of course, it's not. We all have to experiment. And if we're really being diligent about that experimentation, that process alone takes months. So I really am very, very just fierce about women giving themselves more time. We have been conditioned to believe by people who want to sell us things that it can all be done in 6 weeks. And think about it, especially if you're a woman in midlife and you've gained weight, which is incredibly common, that weight didn't come on in 6 weeks. It came on over the course of several years for most of us. And so it's not that it necessarily has to take several years for it to get to where you want to be, but give yourself at least a year, be compassionate and kind, and learn so that you will be so much far ahead of anybody who was focusing on 6 weeks a year from now. Does
Yeah,
that make
Barbie,
sense?
I absolutely love that. I think that's such a good attitude. And several things are bound to happen when we shift our perspective to a year because, number one, we're not struggling with unfulfilled expectations and then losing
Right.
motivation because of that, throwing in the towel and then yo-yoing from that. Number two, it's going to be a lot more sustainable because we don't have to engage in such aggressive methods, and rather we can
That's
focus
right.
on moderation. And number three,
Yeah.
we're really working on the habits, on essentially becoming a new person, or at least a very improved person, because we
Right, a
did
new version at
all little things.
least. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love it.
Yeah.
I think that's really good, like focusing on who do I want to be in a year's time, not just like what do I want to look like, but what are the traits, how does that person show up? And then we can slowly step into those blueprints. I think that's a really great approach.
Yes, and thank you for saying that because that is something that I say a lot to the people I work with, and that is and this should never feel like shame or being unkind to yourself, but when you have a choice to make and you could go down one path, which would be health promoting, or another path which might set you back a bit, when you have, take a mindful pause and just think, what would that version of myself choose? The version of myself I want to see a year from now, what would she choose in this situation? And it doesn't mean you always have to make the health promoting choice, but at least you're taking full ownership of those choices. And there's a lot of learning that goes on there about stepping out of the behaviors that got you where you are now and learning new ones. And again, that is all about repetition. I see women and men beating themselves up all the time for not just getting it right overnight. I've got this beautiful plan laid out ahead of me. Why can I not just follow this? Because because you've been doing something completely different for the last, let's say, 10 years. You've repeated those behaviors thousands, if not tens of thousands of times. You have to do the same thing with the new behaviors in order for the neuroplasticity to kick in and those new neural pathways to be created. So we need to give ourselves a little bit of a break
Yeah.
and a little bit more time. I think that, in my opinion, one of the reasons that we do as a society, as a worldwide, really have such an issue creating healthy change is because we're in a hurry. Because we expect to be able to do it much more quickly than is humanly possible. And then we have that little, it's like a little section of time where nothing's really happening. We're working at it and we're making progress. And if we would just keep going for a little bit longer, that's when we'd see it. But there's this little gap of time where most people give up. And if we could just make it over that hump by thinking long term, we'd be so much better off.
Oh, absolutely. Really, really. I can only attest to that from having worked with my clients and also, of course, some personal experience with that as well. But I love how you said it also encourages us to give ourselves more grace and really to think of more and what kind of actions we want to bring forward and not just the results overall. And yeah,
Right.
I mean, we also both know how important guidance and community perhaps is for that. And I know that you have a wonderful membership that I think it's called a
Yeah.
Brain Space and Brain Tool.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Maybe you want to
Yeah.
share a little bit what kind of work you do in there.
Yeah. So again, I've been doing this for a long time privately with one-on-one clients. I also do corporate wellness programming. That's kind of a whole other ball of wax in my business. But you know, I wanted to make what I do one-on-one much more accessible because I could see, I just, like I said earlier when we were talking, I really want to be even just a small part of helping at least a segment of women change the future of their brain health. And in order to do that, I needed to make it affordable, I needed to make it accessible, and I needed to make it something that you could do anywhere in the world. So I built this platform called Brain Space. And over the course of a year, I take the group through seven pillars of brain health. So we start with nutrition, which we're in the middle of right now. Then we'll move to exercise. Then we'll move to stress management. Then we'll move to sleep. Then we'll move to building cognitive reserve. Then we'll move to social connection. And then finally, we'll wrap up the year around the holidays with purpose and joy, because these are equally important, you know, features of a person's life. And you know, sometimes people roll their eyes at that piece, but one of the reasons it was so important to me to emphasize that is that, again, in these decades of work with people, I have invariably found that the people who had the hardest time affecting meaningful change, exercising, improving what they're eating, taking good care of themselves, they lacked purpose and joy. They just were doing it because they thought they were supposed to. And the lack of purpose and joy in their lives was kind of keeping them on this hamster wheel of finding joy in food, you know, not having the energy to exercise. And so to me, it really is this crucial facet of your overall health, not just this sort of woo. You know, thing that, you know, the wellness crowd talks about. It really is an important, very science-driven facet of our health.
I love that you have included that, and every single pillar seems so important. I think part of what you've created there, aside from making it more accessible, it sounds like it's great. It's a great community as well. And what I often
Yeah.
women that go through perimenopause or menopause is specifically like, oh, I thought I was the only one who felt that way, or oh, I didn't know if that was normal or not, whatever the heck normal even means. But you know, like,
Right.
and so the feeling like you're not the only one out there who always wakes up at 2, 3 a.m. and can't go back to sleep, or the only one who is cursing
Right.
their heat waves or whatever, hot flashes. I think that's
Right.
so wonderful. So I love that you've created that space. I would love to hear a little bit more about that first pillar of nutrition. Just
Sure.
in general, what your recommendations are there in terms of nutritional aspects in order to improve our brain health?
Yeah, so you know, nutrition, as you know, is nutrition science is incredibly complex and nuanced, right? There's a lot to it, and it's highly dependent on the individual. However, what the average healthy person requires in order to maintain health is incredibly simple. And you wouldn't know that from being on social media. You know, everybody makes it so complicated. The truth is, there are several dietary avenues to good health, good metabolic health, good brain health. Doesn't matter if you're vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, omnivore, whatever you like. But what all of these sort of approaches have in common that keep our brains nice and healthy are that they are low in saturated fat, high in fiber, especially prebiotic viscous fiber. They are low in added sugar. They are low in sodium. You know, it's funny, sodium doesn't get talked about a whole lot. We're all so obsessed with sugar. But, and by the way, I'm talking about added sugar, not fruit. We want the fruit. But sodium is equally important, and we are over consuming it, at least in the US. Not too many calories, not too few. You know, we don't want to be on either end of that spectrum. We want to find our energy balance. And then this is sort of one that I add in, but it's pretty much agreed upon across the board. And that's not drinking our calories as often as possible. It's just an area that's kind of among the easier to, you know, kind of tweak if fat loss is a goal, if improving our body composition is a goal, if getting a better handle on inflammation is a goal, just not drinking a lot of sugary drinks or alcoholic drinks. But that's not terribly complicated. You know, and then of course, I am a huge fan of the MIND diet or MIND Mediterranean Dash intervention for neurodegenerative delay, which came from a study that was published in 2015 and subsequently has had a lot of research to back it up. But it highlights several foods that are particularly beneficial for brain health. So leafy greens, berries, fatty fish, colorful vegetables, olive oil, beans and legumes, nuts and seeds. So the more of these that we're getting, and if you kind of notice, there's sort of a theme there. It's not that you need to be vegan or vegetarian, but plant forward is a really good idea because plants, first of all, we don't even completely understand everything that goes on in plant foods that make them so beneficial. There's a symphony happening there that we have yet to fully, you know, completely comprehend. But the fiber and the polyphenols, so all of those fabulous colors are part of what are helping us fight disease. So.
I love how you framed that with the beautiful symphony, because sometimes people think, oh, I'm taking a multivitamin and there's fiber in my protein bar. It's like, yeah, no, that's not really the same thing. And also even from the mental perspective of like how you're that eating experience or how satiated you are from that versus from like actually eating fruit or vegetables. And yeah, I think the beautiful thing about that MIND diet, is that what you called it? It was Mediterranean adapted diet, is also that it does include these wonderful healthy fats, and on top of that, normally a good amount of protein, which in my experience is also often something that women struggle with to get in. They might have like one egg for breakfast, and then their 3 ounces of chicken for lunch, if that, and a teeny tiny yogurt in the afternoon or so, and coming to like 50, 60 grams of protein in a day. And I do think that that is very, or we're learning more about how that's also connected to brain health.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. It is, you know, the leaner proteins, plant proteins, and the fatty fish and leaner sources of meats, chicken, you know, egg whites, foods like that. We do, you know, we don't need to completely overdo it. There's a lot. There's a lot out there that's like trying to shove 160 grams of fiber down the throat of somebody who weighs 115 pounds. That's absurd. But making sure you're getting enough protein, and the general guidelines are about 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram. Higher end if you're vegan or vegetarian, just to make sure you're getting a nice broad spectrum of amino acids. Higher end if you're really active, strength training. But yeah, which is about 0.7 grams per pound for those of us who are like, what? What's a kilogram in the US? But yeah, and that should, I mean, and that should be adequate and great. But don't forget, because I absolutely, and you've probably seen this too, sometimes people think that just eating protein is what builds muscle. We need the stimulus of strength training to actually build the muscle. It's just that the protein is the substrate, and protein does a lot of other things in the body too, so it's important.
Of course, yes, and yeah, I think alongside with that quote unquote myth, sometimes also goes that no carbs at all or so, like women often trying to stay away completely from carbs, and I think there is some danger in that as well, exactly for the point of missing the fiber and some of those wonderful micronutrients that we get from starchy and non-starchy high quality carbs. But yeah, still that recommendation of not drinking your calories, that's by far, that's absolutely my favorite. I think if almost everybody just starts with that, that. Really good thing that you can do for your long-term health, because it means cutting out that added sugar. If you're cutting out sodas and the alcohol, or just in general, you're going to feel so much more satiated, because yes, fruit is awesome, but if we actually chew the fruit, if we bite the fruit, very different experience than if you have a glass of juice and that's technically five servings of fruit or so, and you're not feeling that satiated.
Right, exactly.
Well, Barbie, thank you so much for your time. It's truly been a pleasure. I will make
Oh,
sure
it's been
to
mine.
put all your links in the show notes, because I want people to check out your content, as of course,
Thank you.
especially the women that go through, that are about to or already in perimenopause or menopause. But I think this has been very helpful for anybody at any age, male, female, or not. So truly, thank
Oh,
you so
great.
much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Barbie. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.